Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Out to move, come out there.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
unemployment rising fast, the Beatles' new records again.
And the only safe place to live is on an Indian reservation.
And the band played on.
Eve of destruction, tax deduction.
The inspectors, bill collectors,
hard growing the man population out of hand.
Suicide, too many bills, hippies moving to the hills. People all over the world are shouting in the war.
And the band played on.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. Kick that bitch in your face. Shit, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh, oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She sure like you a motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't be hurting himself.
You from Nuke State. It's over.
When I say it's over, everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
Now, who got
something
right? Because I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Real quick, just like this. What a child. He will come, y'all.
Look. The main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you. Because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavored Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Okay, today's It's My House is titled Infrastructure Empowerment. We're supposed to be doing, and this, I guess this can be included in this Kaizen, where we do a little bit of a particular task, working on a goal each day. So I'm going to include this in here, infrastructure, because I listened to an audio last night. I don't have it queued up. for this podcast. But it deals with infrastructure. And because it, you can have a standalone business that it doesn't work. And that's because you don't have an infrastructure set up to make it work, or to help it, to support it. And infrastructure is like very, very fundamental stuff. And I guess the conversation I was having with somebody last night, start over sports. There's a very successful high school coach that coached me. But he set up a sports infrastructure. And so anyway, infrastructure empowerment, I guess we're going to have to include information throughout the year on infrastructure, how to set one up, because we've got to set one up. So we're going to include this on our Kaizen. This is going to help us reach our goal. Oh, man, wait a minute. I'm trying to cue it up for you guys right now. And it's still processing. Let me refresh again. All right. But part of the infrastructure is, well, we got to talk about the fundamentals of infrastructure. And then when we get to certain businesses or industries or projects that we're organizing, we need to talk about the infrastructure for that as well. But and this is something I think there needs to be more conversations on. Infrastructure, along with plans on how to set up the proper infrastructure for specific okay, the audio, I got three audios for you guys, just on infrastructure. And usually, it would be queued up by now. Or you know what, let me, I'm going to go to the phone lines here. Robin's here, but Robin's taking a break today from talking on air, I guess. I spoke to her about an hour or so ago, so, Robin, I think it sounded like you were catching a cold or something was trying to catch you, but anyway, so she's resting her vocals, but Robin is, she's around. Anyway, while I'm finding out what's going on with this, I had three audios for you guys, and they're usually, because I'd loaded these things up before the podcast. But it's still doing its I wanted to play that before I open up the phone lines too. Okay, I'm refreshing. I'm on my laptop. Okay. Oh, well, you know what? While we're working on that, okay, before we go to the phone lines, one of the things that is needed for the infrastructure of the communities that we shall be developing or adding value to is transportation. So I'm going to play this audio. I played it last year, but it's apt for this year because we're going to need this.
Brooklyn Independent Television.
It's been nearly 2 months since the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission greenlit the Group Vehicle Ride Pilot Program. The program was designed to help commuters along corridors where bus routes had been eliminated. The B71 is the latest route to join the program, and Sherry Carabin jumped aboard the dollar van to find out if it's smooth sailing.
Our starting point is at Franklin. That's the starting point, and Eastern Parkway.
The B71 service area is among a handful that are part of the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission's Group Ride Vehicle Pilot Project. The vans cost $2 a ride and are designed to assist those living in areas where the MTA has discontinued bus routes. The first group ride vehicles hit the streets around mid-September in Queens. Brooklyn's B23 and B39 routes are also part of the pilot. The B71 route starts in Crown Heights and ends in Red Hook, with Brooklyn Van Lines providing the service.
Traditionally, van companies would operate in Caribbean neighborhoods, Caribbean American neighborhoods, Central Brooklyn, and in Queens. But this new agreement with the city expanded our range in going to into areas that we would normally would not go. So that is a given. That is a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the van industry.
Right now, Brooklyn Van Lines has about a half dozen drivers, manning the van 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. On this Sunday, I decided to get on board and take a tour of the route myself. It's the latest area of the borough to be serviced by group ride vehicles, but those who operate the former B71 bus route are having a hard time getting commuters to hop on board.
The numbers are in 15 to 20 range for the day, which
15 to 20 passengers for the entire day?
Right. So,
with numbers like those, it's hard to make ends meet.
For insurance costs almost $10,000 per year. You got to do DOT inspection 2 times per year. There's a diamond there, you got to pay a TLC diamond. It's $550 for 2 years. Registration fee also went up.
3 months ago, the MTA cut that route, and it took really too long. This should have been done the following day after the last bus left that route. But it took so long before the city could make this agreement and make this arrangement with the van companies, that all of the riders pretty much went back to, you know, taking their own transportation or finding some other form of transporting themselves to their work and their shopping areas.
TLC Commissioner David Yaski admits there are growing pains, saying, quote, "The challenge is to make sure that as many people as possible are aware of the service. And to that end, we've been assisting to the extent that we can by devoting space on our website to the services, printing and distributing thousands of flyers and palm cards, making presentations at community forums, and enlisting the media to help spread the word. But we do hope to see the operators become far more aggressive in their marketing and outreach efforts," end quote. Certainly, some of the residents Brooklyn Review spoke to seemed to be unaware of the service, but not unwilling to consider using it.
So would you be likely to use them now that you know about them?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I would give it a shot.
I really don't know much about it, but if it can get me where I need to go, yeah, I would take it.
This community board 6 member has a different take on the issue.
Ideally, I'd like to see the bus service return. Besides failing that, it would be nice if the vans were on some kind of predictable schedule.
Setting a schedule is one of the things those at Brooklyn Van Lines are looking at, but it's not their only focus.
some of the things we're considering includes, you know, $1 fare during off-peak and weekend times, or some sort of all-you-can-ride for a period of time. Fares, you know, maybe $3 you can ride for 3 hours, or something to get people to try the service for some of their daily needs.
In the coming weeks, those who run Brooklyn Van Lines say they'll be hitting the streets and distributing flyers to residents and local businesses, letting everyone know these group ride vehicles are here to stay. For Brooklyn Review, I'm Sherry Carabin.
Download this program's podcast on iTunes, keywords Brooklyn Independent Television.
Okay, so that's the infrastructure, a having transportation as part of your infrastructure is very important, very important. And we also will do a podcast on, you know, like fundraising. You know what? I watched, and let me get to the phone lines real quick. I'll share with you, just a little teaser. The TV show Power, there was a situation on one of the episodes where they needed to raise $2 million within 24 hours. They had an infrastructure put together so that, and they did it. In a non-fictional situation, there is a shed builder that this guy does over $300 million a year on sheds. And he has the infrastructure in place. So we're going to use this Kaizen Japanese methodology or philosophy and not only in house building. And we did two little videos yesterday, which we had to add on to that. But we're going to add this philosophy on, including on how to raise money, how to set up an infrastructure. Because I think the missing piece with a lot of black economic development or economic development, period, regardless of race, is we don't know anything about infrastructure. You need to know something about infrastructure to raise money, to do projects, to have those things supported. Just don't be standalone. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. 818, your phone line is open. Happy 2020. Happy new decade.
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO, your president candidate 2024. I love what you've been talking about. You said something that's really important. We can't do it by ourselves. We need help. And when we need assistance is one thing, but support is a whole different energy. And we've been supporting a lot of negative energy. What that means is the stuff that's not going to help us get there, we're putting energy into that. And the stuff that will get us to where we need to be, we just run away and shun from it. Like the brother with the fishing pole. You know, I did hear the video, and I've seen that video before, and that's the problem. Nobody wants to be a worker. Nobody wants to take the time to learn how to be a boss, but everybody has to be either one or other. Even David in the Bible had to follow Saul before he became one of the greatest kings that lived. But after he had his own kids with having adultery with Bathsheba, his son picked up all the good stuff and got on with God. So I say that to say to you, not preaching, but teaching. We had to realize, we had to think outside the box. This is the year of change. The decade has turned. Everything that hasn't worked for the last 10 years, 2017, 2018, 2019, those were the roughest years of our lives. Anybody over the age of 25 that has a business, product, service, brand, image, likeness, and they know how to spend their money, it's been a real rough time. But if you read the book of Job in chapter 1, that's what we've been focused on for so many sermons. But we need to be in chapter 42, which is the last book, where in his latter days was going to be better than his early days, saying, everything that didn't work for the last 10 years now is going to actually come to fruition. All the seeds that you planted, they're going to harvest. All the times you put your fishing pole in that water, it's going to cast your net on the positive waters. So actually, everything that you feel like didn't work is not going to make sense. And if you read the book of Ephesians 3:14, through 3:20, it's going to tell you that God is able and he's going to bless you abundantly more than you could ever ask or think of. So don't think out in the box. Don't think outside the box. Don't even look at the box. The endless limit is the universe. Anything is yours. Just know that you're in the position, anointed and appointed on God's highway. My name is Pastor Don Jr., CEO. I'm your president candidate in 2024. I'm so happy to be back on It's My House Radio. If you haven't already, you listen to this on an online, a podcast. The call-in number is 619-768-2945. Get involved with this movement. L.A. Davis is really doing it. He's walking like he's talking. I'm just glad to be back. It's time to kick ass for 2024. Let's get it.
Now, thank you, Pastor Don. Now, Pastor Don, you have a podcast yourself, which is very unique. Could you give us information on how we can tap in on that?
Absolutely. We have Winning Team Wednesday. Every Wednesday from 7 p.m. East Coast time to 9 p.m. East Coast time, 4 p.m. on the West Coast to 6 p.m., we have 300 winning team members, people like L.A. Davis and everybody that's coming from different backgrounds, different faiths, different ethnicities. Everybody is welcome. We want business owners. We want the people that's selling dope. We want people that's looking for a change in their lives. We don't get into bashing you and what you do and how who you sleep with or what you choose to ingest in your body. We all about education, empowerment, and enlightenment, and we all about thinking outside of what we know. If we don't have healthy conversation, faith comes by hearing. You have to hear the word to follow, and somebody's got to teach you. I've been pastoring this year come July the 4th for 14 years. I smoke, I drink. At the same time, I do understand the universe. You jump in front of a car, you will be ran over. Well, life right now is hard. We got 45 making a lot of laws, turning back a lot of stuff. And this is the first time I ever seen everybody excited about impeaching the president. Even what happened with Clinton, they didn't get this far through the process. So it's a change, and it's a changing of the guard. That's why the decade changed. With the decade changing, we as the winning team, we're going to work together, unite, and talk about these situations every Wednesday. It don't cost you anything to call in, but we don't want you to call and get the wisdom and waste the airspace. We want you to call in, hear it, and be about it. If it's nothing else but texting somebody and telling them about the show, we have to spread the word to make sure that our bank accounts can be moved with the decimals. So them same zeros, you put a one in front of it, that dollar can turn into a million with having the right people pushing that decimal. So this is not a game. This is not to be televised. It's not to be revolutionized. It's all about you bringing what you got. If you don't have any money, just come and clean up. If you can't clean up, tell somebody about it. If you can't tell somebody about it, at least pray for us so we can get it happening. But whatever you bring to the table is going to be duly noted, appreciated, and appointed. But if you don't bring anything, you're doing yourself a disservice. So, L.A., I can't tell you enough. Get out of that chat room. Get offline. Call into the show. Let your voice be heard. If you're not recorded, you can't be rewarded in the book of life, and everyone will be judged for their actions. So what you reap is what you sow. You sow positive situations, you harvest positive seeds. Once again, that call-in number is 619-768-2945. And my name is Pastor Don Jr., CEO, and blessings to all the panelists and all the people that spoke, and blessings to you for hearing me for the first time.
Now, Pastor Don, give us the time and the number to call in on your podcast, because that's a very important podcast, too, because we're talking about infrastructure empowerment, and I was speaking with Robin earlier. This is 2020, beginning of the year, and I was thinking, you know, like 20 years ago, a lot of people on Yahoo Messenger, you know, MSN and all this, in those chat rooms. But now we're doing podcasts, like, because Blog Talk Radio has only been around since, I think, 2006.
Correct.
And then another one, Spreaker, around 2010. But now the difference between 2020 and the year 2000, 20-year difference, two decades.
Correct.
Is everybody,
correct,
we're talking infrastructure empowerment, everybody, including the lady on Section 8 or the person on Section 8, we've got cell phones. We got smartphones. The cell phone and the smartphone is the new transistor radio. You can also watch movies on it, TV shows. You can talk to people on their device. on another continent and whatnot. So, and then we can speak with people like,
let me grab the floor right there. Let me help you out real quick. Okay, when we grew up in analog radio, when it was AM was the main four-way, the main way you would actually receive your media, you had to be in front of a radio to record it on a cassette or actually hear it. But now everything is on demand, so you can watch a whole Cosby show on a Sunday and see it all in its entirety. We had to wait a whole week and talk about it for a week. So with that being said, because we're in such an on-demand society, the infrastructure and the framework is voice recognition software. Google is paying college kids $13 to $18 an hour to listen to these shows to get the dialect. So when people say four, it comes up in your GPS as four. And when people say it in Chinese, Arabic, or Spanish, it still need to come up as four. So I say that to say to you, what we're doing right now is making history, and because we have over 4,500 radio networks on our database, the infrastructure I built with the winning team is about everybody working together to bring forth their dreams. If we don't have a building to blow up, don't get mad. Start looking at people that do have a building. Let's work together, and then we can make something happen. Everything comes forth with change by us talking and having communication, and that's what happens. It's not just having a book, but if somebody don't tell you where the library is and what to read and what letters go together to make a word, you don't know how to actually comprehend it properly. So a lot of people read the Bible, they don't get what they need because they don't know what Paul was going through and the people who wrote the Bible. But if you understand what the author was going through when they wrote a body of work, it makes it easier for you to read. You comprehend it better, and while you comprehend it better, you're able to tell more people about it. So when it comes to infrastructure, there's 1,000 people right now under the sound of my voice that have a business. They don't have any marketing, but they got 400 units of whatever widgets that sit in their living room, and they can't move it because they're not talking to other people with the means to move it. What I'm saying to y'all right now, this is a perfect platform to meet other entrepreneurs. As y'all hear phone numbers, call the people, reach out. If nothing else to say, I heard you on This My House Radio, because people need to know that somebody's on the other end listening. The only way that you can make the infrastructure work is having framework, and without the foundation, that framework don't count. And if we don't start by taking a step on faith, we don't know where the staircase is. We just had Martin Luther King's birthday, the holiday, and that was his biggest thing. He said, you don't know where the staircase is going to end, but you got to take the first step. The first step is being aware that there's a change that needs to happen, and you got to start from within yourself. When you look in the mirror, it's you and your spirit. You bring you wherever you go, but at the same time, if you get that gut feeling and you need to make a call, make the call. You never know who's going to be on the other end of the phone, and don't count anybody out because you don't know what God's going to do with them. It's a brand new day, y'all. We're about to get busy. The information to call into the radio show on Wednesday is this is the call-in number, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a two-hour show. We take callers all the time. We take callers from all across the globe. It's a free conference call number. We use a free conference call to record a two-hour show. Then we distribute it to 25 AM and FM radio markets. These are radio stations with antennas, program directors, traffic, and they run commercials. These are real radio stations. So we take the digital, and we take it to the terrestrial radio. So the call-in number is 712-775-7031. The PIN access code is 330568. That's 330568. Now, when you call the number, you call in, you're going to hear commercials, you might hear people speaking. You don't necessarily have to press the one, but the whole thing, before you call the number, you write down your name, you write down your city, you write down your phone number, you write down the five top things you're doing with your business, product, service, image, likeness, and brand, because we never know who's going to be on the line. We can have Bill Gates, Lenny Williams. We've had a lot of major people, Judge Joe Brown. Anybody could be on our line, so you never get a second chance to make a first impression, and when you plant the seed, be ready to harvest. A farmer don't go out to the ground and say, I'm going to plant all these seeds and never come back to get them. No. Everything you're planting today is for you to harvest for tomorrow, and the more you plant today, the more you'll harvest tomorrow. So, again, it's Winning Team Wednesday. I'm Pastor Don Jr., CEO. I'm the founder and commissioner of the Elite 300 Winning Team members. We are here to change the world. We're starting one voice at a time, one spirit at a time, and whatever you bring to the table, it was meant by God, appointed, anointed, and aligned. That's the triple A of God's highway. I'm moving out the way, L.A. You got the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you, Pastor Don. I'll give you a call probably later today or tomorrow morning at the latest. Probably later today, so I won't forget. But good hearing you again, and I'll be on that call tomorrow.
I'm going to stay on the whole show. I'm taking notes. I want to hear everybody.
Let's go to our next caller here. 314, your mic is open.
L.A., what's going on? How's everything going, man? Hey, I wanted to ask Pastor, what's his platform? He's running for 2024, but I guess he's gone.
I'm right here. I'm right here. My platform.
What's your platform, Pastor? I mean, how are you on the Second Amendment, school choice, border protection, getting rid of illegals, terrorists?
Let me say this, and this is really important. First off, we as a people, we all aliens. If you read the Bible very closely, it says, "Let us make man in our image." So, on the flip of that,
I'm talking about the United States, Pastor. Now, I don't want to get it 100%. In the Bible. If you're going to go there,
I know you, Mr. Bianchi. I know you very well. What I'm saying to you, and I want to say it again, you ask the question, I'm going to answer the question. We all are aliens. Nobody is actually directly, other than the natives, nobody is actually from America. Let's go ahead and call that a spade a spade.
All right, well, let me rephrase this. No, hang on,
okay.
Let me rephrase this. I asked you the question, if it's okay. Since the enactment of the U.S. Constitution in 1789 began, what is your position on those things? I'm not talking about no Bible. Because from a government standpoint, that cannot be considered by a government. They can't respect any religion. They can respect the Satanists just as well as they can respect the 1%ers. But on those issues, what is your position on border protection and the illegals that's here, the Second Amendment, and terrorists,
well,
and school choice?
It's a three-part answer I have. This is the first part to the answer.
Just ask the school choice.
Okay, anybody that's born here on American soil, they're American. We need to have a better citizenship program. The citizenship, when people go to take their citizen test to become a U.S. citizen, they ask them at least 75% of questions that none of that knowledge is meaning for them to be American citizens. They ask them who was president, who was the 7th to 8th president, and nobody's talking about that right now. So a lot of people are failing the test for their citizenship. I was actually
locked up. But what's your
position
on it? Are you pro or are you against it? Well, L.A. doesn't have all day.
What I'm saying to you, I'm neither, because on one side of the coin.
All right, you need. How about school choice? How about school choice?
Oh, well, I believe that people should be able to choose where they go to school, but I believe the curriculum should be changed because we're learning stuff that we're not using. We're not teaching kids about their Social Security numbers in school, so their credit is jacked up by their mamas and their daddies before they even get out there and get a job and get credit. So the kids.
All right, school
17,
choice is school choice with vouchers. You're for it. How about terrorists to protect American manufacturers from dumping foreigners?
Right now, we live in an age. There's a movie that's right now available on Netflix called Red Dawn. They did an EMP, and they shut everybody down, and everybody lost all their cell phones, their digital technology, and we was invaded. That's liable to happen. What I'm saying to you, terrorists is always
this. Oh, I'm sorry. I said tariff, T-A-R-R-I-F-F. Tariff on imported manufactured goods coming from abroad that's undercutting American manufacturers.
Well, and this is again, and I want to make sure that we both understand each other. We don't manufacture as many products because things are being sold digitally. Where Amazon right now is one of the biggest companies that's taken away from American jobs because they're the manufacturing, the Detroit, the places where they actually got steel and workers, these mills are being closed because everybody's shipping stuff offline. So, again, it goes back into the digital technology. Digital technology.
Yeah, are you
great,
for terrorists or are you against terrorists?
I'm neither. I'm neither. In
all right,
how about
Second Amendment?
Okay. What I'm trying
to say
about
the Second Amendment?
That's what I'm trying
are
to
you
think.
For? Would you be for a national right to carry?
Well, I'm neither. In some cities, you have to carry a gun, and some you don't. If you live in a rural area like Arizona, hold on. If you live in a rural area like Arizona, it's an open carry place, but at the same instance, people have taught their kids from an early age how to respect guns. But if you live in an area like L.A. where they're shooting people every day, it's not the same energy. So my whole thing of running for president, I'm going to empower, enlighten, and educate people. And the more that we understand as a people, we got to do it on a local level first, and then we can come together as a conglomerate and put it together. My job is for 4 years is to fix the wrongs, to fill these voids, and at the same time be real about it. The curriculum is jacked up. The people are not learning what we need to learn in school. The people that do the most work, the people that come from Mexico as illegal, they're the ones who cut our grass and make sure that we have our stuff right at home so we can go make $100,000 a year. We only pay them $25.
Do you believe that illegals? Do you believe that illegals should have the right to vote and also have the right to buy homes with mortgages using their I-10s?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
100%.
Now,
the answers
you gave on the questions I would have towards you or any other candidate, I don't think I'd be voting for you. But that's all right. You're going to get some votes.
I want to say this. Mr. Bianchi, you are the guy that think outside the box, and you always made me a better presidential candidate because you asked me those fact-finding questions. That's why I needed the 4 years that I'm going to take to actually make sure that my curriculum, my policies, and my procedures fits everybody. But the bottom line is like this. It's not about being 50-50. It's a 51-49 thing. At some point in every relationship, somebody is the aggressor doing what needs to be done, and then somebody, the 49%, is on the other side receiving it. Well, when we make these laws are going to last for the next 20 years. So thinking for the future, the people that's going to come after us, the kids, the Social Security, we have to make sure they're educated the right way. And for the last 15 years, the internet has become the biggest way. We're digesting information at 280 characters, and with us digesting information at 280 characters, we're not reading the fine print in the actual bill. We need to have better curriculum going out for all the people that make the laws. They never got food stamps. They never been on welfare. They jail, and the felons that's in jail, they don't get a chance to vote, and the homeless people, which all these laws are affecting, they can't even vote because they're homeless.
I don't think that felons should. When you commit a crime against the state, which is the people, then you should be willing. Well, you should be denied certain privileges, which includes the right to vote. Now, states can set those standards themselves. That's not a federal standard. Only time a federal standard on voting come place is on federal elections.
Have you ever been to Florida? Because in Florida, in the 2000 election, the politicians was actually turning black people away from voting, which is a major crime. So they was actually stacking the deck, and it's hundreds
why were
and
they,
hundreds.
But why were they? See, you
the,
said
the reason
that
why
it to,
was turning,
wait a minute,
okay,
hang on
for
a second. Let me tell you what I heard you say. You made it sound that politicians were turning black people away from voting.
Yes.
Then you went on to another area. But why were they being turned away?
Because they were black. That was it. They, at what point before they put out the legislation, we was considered three-fifths, so our vote wasn't a whole vote. And
who was considered three-fifths?
Black people.
Back then for the
that went on for a long punch of time. That's
and
what
I think
I'm
it's a good idea.
It's a lot of things in the Constitution that's contradictory, just like in the Bible. In one scripture, they say, thou shalt not kill. In another scripture, they say, kill them all and let God sort them out. What I'm trying to say to you, we have to get back to the curriculum, and these kids that's coming after us, we got to train them up the right way.
In most states, especially Missouri, the parents in a school district have the right to set whatever curriculum they want to have.
Okay, let me say, when you say parents, okay, you said a key word, you say parents. That means there's two
parents
people in
the
household. Right, but there's what I'm saying to you, there's more households with a single mother or a single father, or that's in a foster system where they're not getting a guardianship and they're not getting the proper information. So what I'm saying is
has that got to do with a person exercising their right in a school district to set the curriculum as prescribed that the law gives them the right to do? In Missouri, you can have whatever curriculum, whatever textbooks, and teacher instruction that you want to have.
What it is like this. What I'm saying to you is I'm about preventative maintenance. The world has got to the point where we're so far off from what the Constitution says, and with this internet, nothing in the Constitution was even thinking about Wi-Fi. So everything that was written at that time was 100% for how the people felt. Slavery was cool in some states because the people that was making the money, they had no problem with the free labor. But then once it got to a larger global scale, the people over in Switzerland, the people in France, the people in Britain, they said, hold up, this is not right. So what I'm saying to you, so you can really understand and catch it, we are not where we need to be because we're not as a whole working together. We're working individually. We all our own separate alliances, and we just come together on certain situations.
You have the LGBTQ group that works together. You got Black Lives Matter group that works together. You got Black Guns Matter groups that work together. The NOI, Nation of Islam, the Hebrew Islam. You do have groups that work together. They work together on their own particular agenda, which is all
right. Right. What I'm saying to you is even with them working together on their own particular agenda, the laws that protect those particular agendas was not written under the right pretenses because they're going off a age-old document that hasn't been updated to deal with the social media. As kids right now, suicide is up more than it's ever been. The police are shooting kids because of the bullying. The police are locking people up.
So you say that
the
Constitution wasn't written to deal with the media. It's not the media. Free speech is uses of speech. The First Amendment deals with that.
What
right
I'm saying
now.
To you is when the Constitution was written for a single cell organism, but we're human beings. This is a human race. We have multiple cells. Now that we have so many different like the human body, we got the hearts, the lungs, we have multiple cells now. So it's not just
so
one.
So you saying
way,
that the founders of the
ways.
Constitution didn't have no lungs and cells?
No, what I'm saying is the founders of the Constitution didn't have the internet, and the people that founded the Constitution, like people like Thomas Jefferson, who wrote a lot of the bills, he on one hand he was writing a bill, on the left hand he was smacking his chick that was serving his biscuits and breakfast.
Well, but we don't know what he was doing with the smacking this lady. That's a speculation that you're throwing.
Okay, no. It's documented he had over 100 black kids from illegitimate. He wasn't married to the women. He was raping his maid.
Well, how
do
you know he was raping these women? It may have been consensual sex.
Well, that wasn't all consensual sex. There's no way that you can tell
me. We don't know
that.
Nobody
was
there.
It's documented. Read Frederick Douglass stuff. Read the books.
Wait a minute. Oh, let's try this into something. What you guys are saying? All right, Pastor Don is running for what, president, sir?
Yes. Correct.
All right. I want to tie in what Pianki's saying and what you're saying, Pastor Don, into our title today, infrastructure empowerment. Now, you're running for president. It could be running for judge, senator. I'm going to play the Claude Anderson piece, which I start off with, because I'm looking at that is infrastructure, because we want to take a look at what to get elected to anything. United States, what does a person need to be, what kind of infrastructure that needs to be set up?
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor.
Okay, let's stop right there. Now, when it comes to infrastructure, Pastor Don, and Priyanka, you can comment on after Pastor Don speaks. What kind of, you're going to need money, okay?
Correct.
What type of infrastructure do you have in place, or do you suggest, I mean, organizing political action committee, super PAC, whatever, let's say, so you can raise $1 million. Let's say if you needed $1 million by Friday, because like Claude Anderson says, and I'm going to preface it with this. You have quite a few black people, I don't know what the percentage is, that they say President Obama didn't do anything for black people, but he did something for gay people. Well, let's take a chapter out of a page out of Claude Anderson's teachings here. The LGBT crowd, through political action committees, I mean, maybe super PACs, they helped bankroll him on the front end with their agenda. All right. Now, to get Pastor Don elected, okay, we can't pray him or anybody else in office.
Amen.
Okay. That's not going to happen. All right.
Correct.
He needs money. I'm being very serious about this. So What type of infrastructure do we need him to put together to help you raise $1 million? And that's not a whole lot of money, people. Because if we want,
well, let me help you.
And he's got a, he does have
in
a
2008. In 2008, what I did was I helped Barack Obama get elected. And we was using MySpace. We wasn't trying to get $100,000 out of somebody working an 80-hour job. People was putting in $5 payments, $10 payments, and $20 payments. A lot of times, it's just about changing the way you live. Instead of going to the restaurant and spending $100 to feed four people, you take $25 and go to Walmart and go get you some food to cook, take $25 out of the $75 that's left, put it to the campaign, and take the other $50 and get some stuff for your house that you need to build more equity. What's going on is we're mismanaging our funds. America is the only country in the world that we go hunting on a full stomach. Not only do we go hunting on a full stomach, we run through money left and right, and the dope game is one of the biggest suppliers of everything. The FBI, the CIA, the DEA, they all bringing these drugs in here. It's all untraceable money as it circulates through the neighborhoods. It breaks down the neighborhood. It brings forth gentrification. They come and buy our properties and then move a whole bunch of other people in. So ideally, us working together with an infrastructure, meaning we're not looking for one person to pay for everybody. We're looking for everybody to pitch in what they can. At the same time, the people who are pitching in, don't look at the people that's not pitching in. Do what you can to make those funds be effective with limited resources. That's my ideal for my campaign.
All right, Pastor Don, all right, you brought up, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I didn't know. I know Barack Obama used social media, but I didn't know he used MySpace. I did volunteer work for Obama like one night. And that was after a friend of mine, she was telling me how she worked on this campaign, and I was just fascinated with the marketing of it. So when I went to do volunteer work for Obama, this is for his first election. Okay, I was blown away by the people that were donating cell phone minutes to make phone calls. And he had a very, I mean, cell phone minutes donated. You said MySpace, people on MySpace, and that was part of his infrastructure. He also did a lot of by emails as well.
He took the slavery mentality. What I mean by that is, and just catch it, and please listen. When the slave master would take the best cuts of meat and they left us with the chitlins, he used those things that people threw away and made them be effective with what he had. So I'm saying to you, where we're going with this 2024 election campaign, not everybody's going to understand it, but everybody that puts something in, if you call into the radio show one time, you might not do nothing else, but I'm appreciative of that call because you could have had somebody on your line that could have been on speakerphone, and we had one of the biggest voter turnouts because people was tired of Bush, and it's going to happen again in 2024, especially if 45 get reelected. So I'm saying to y'all like this. The plan is not to look at what's not working, to be effective with what does work, and the ones who do have a lot, we don't want everything that you got. We want you to just to take before it because the influence is going to last way more than the money. Some people, if they give us $100 million, that's going to kill us because it's a major donation. That's going to make people stop putting money in. But because they have that influence over millions of people that help them get to be able to net $100 million to be able to throw it our way, now those all those influences are going to give us the infrastructure that we need because the people they influence, oh, man, Michael Jordan put into it, I need to buy it. If Michael Jordan scores 100 points on the basketball court, immediately everybody in the hood is going out to buy those shoes, and that's what happens. So the influence beats the money, but at the end of the day, if it's just about money, we will never have the banks or print the Fort Knox money. If we have the people who are actually spending the $2, $3, $4, $5 going to get the blunts, if they spend a dollar less and put that dollar towards something more, we will win like that. That's my plan.
Okay, all right. Thanks for sharing. That was real life. MySpace, but that's how Barack Obama beat the old boy network, particularly on that first go around through social media. Why, matter of fact, on the and I think Donald Trump even, because he's on Twitter all the time, but Jeb Bush, he had kicked in $100 million, or his supporters, his base, kicked in $100 million on traditional advertising. When he was running for, when Bush was running the first time, and he pulled out kind of early, well, not real early, but he pulled out. So it's, social media, the infrastructure, you need to definitely consider that these days when you're building whatever. Pianki, any comments on that?
Well, me, myself, I'm supporting any goals against interest. I hazardly, what they need to have is Black conservative yellow pages, because this particular black pages that we have today, where it lists businesses, some of these black businesses may be contributing to candidates that proposes legislature and vote against your interests. They may be anti-Second Amendment. So I quit doing that. I don't do it anymore, and I'm not supporting any candidate platform that's going. A candidate against tiny houses?
Well, I haven't heard no candidates come out again. But I'm sure there's somebody out there that might be against it. I don't know. And whatnot. So, okay, well, all right, tune in to Pastor Don. Like I say, that's tomorrow, but it's Tuesday today. We had MLK Day yesterday. What was that quote, Pastor Don, about faith?
We don't know where the staircase leads, but we have to take the first step. And I want to say this, I had a major racial slur happen to me yesterday. I had a guy tell me, he said, "You're a black piece of shit cunt." And I had to really smile at it because there's going to be narrow-minded people on this run. But the biggest thing, what made me smile, we're more educated than we ever been. Whatever we don't know, we could pop on YouTube and find out. And that's why I know for a fact people are not voting like they're supposed to. And it's not just about voting. It's about us invoking our power. So I say this to say to y'all, with the infrastructure working together, we have a lot of positive people on this line under the sound of my voice right now. We have to make a change within ourselves in the mirror first. We have to look for new ways to be who we are. At the same time, we're looking for new ways. We can't knock the other man that's left to us that don't understand, because some people eat steak, some people drink milk, but at the end of the day, their bodies are still being nourished. And if we take that same idea with our infrastructure, we're not focusing on what's not working, and we put more focus and emphasis on what will work, we'll see more results in a positive light every day.
All right. Well, infrastructure is helping connect the dots. So, I suggest to tune in to Pastor Don tomorrow. There's a lot of wealth there. I'll put it like that. A lot of wealth. Robin's quiet today. She's saving her voice. She's in the studio though. But she's saving her voice because she does a lot with Vibes Live, and she's got her streaming stations going. So, look, I'm going to not cut it short, but we're going to pick back up. Well, you know what? This whole infrastructure thing, we're going to include this on a regular because we want to, I guess, include that with our Kaizen philosophy, because it, you just can't look at, okay, we're going to build tiny houses, all right? How are you going to sell them? How are you going to rent them? Okay. Why would a person want to live here? You know, so those are, I would call, some basic infrastructure questions that you need to answer when you're planning your business or whatever. Because, you know, a lot of people start a business, but it's standalone. As a matter of fact, we're going to do Obama through his administration. His administration made some major investments in what some people would call the green economy. But the green economy isn't ramped up the way a lot of people thought it would be, because although he invested in, and I'm not bashing Obama because I like him myself, although he invested in solar power plants here, they were standalone projects. And infrastructure, you got to connect the dots. You got to connect the dots. I mean, it's great if you build, Walmart works not because it's Walmart. Walmart works because they place it within an infrastructure where you got roads and communities that connect to that Walmart or that McDonald's or whatever. Now, if you're in a rural area, okay, you have to think the same way. A lot of people that have the budget that really need to live in a rural area, they stay stuck in the city because they think in a rural area, you know, well, I can't get to, you know, there's no bus lines, which is transportation. There's no library. There's no convenience stores. So these are all opportunities. So that's why we had to include this in our Kaizen thing, because it's not enough just to build a tiny house or anything. You've got to think about, okay, infrastructure, all right? Even before you get it built, you got to think, all right, how are you going to move it before you even get it built? So in any event, that's it for today. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
At Jiffy Lube, we care about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.